Avarachasakamastu Vijeta Brahmanapati Indram Indriyakamastu Prajakama Prajapati. Absorbed in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence, should worship the master of the Vedas, Lord Brahma, or Brihaspati, the learned priest. One who desires powerful sex should worship the heavenly king, Indra. And one who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. One who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship Rudra, incarnations of Lord Shiva, if he wants to be a great hero. One who wants a large stock of grains should worship Aditi. One who desires to attain the heavenly planets should worship the sons of Aditi. One who desires a worldly kingdom should worship Vishwadev. And one who wants to be popular with the general mass of population should worship the Sadhya demigod. One who desires a long span of life should worship the demigods known as the Ashwini Kumaras. And a person desiring a strongly built body should worship the earth. One who desires stability in his post should worship the horizon and the earth combined. One who desires to be beautiful should worship the beautiful residence of the Gandharva planet. And one who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras and the Uravasi society gurus of the heavenly kingdom. One who desires domination over others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship the personality of Godhead. And one who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigod Varuna. If one desires to be a greatly learned man, he should worship Lord Shiva. And if one desires a good marital relation, he should worship the chaste goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. There are different modes of worship for different persons desiring success in particular subjects. The conditioned soul living within the purview of the material world cannot be expert in every type of materially enjoyable asset, but one can have considerable influence over a particular matter by worshiping a particular demigod, as mentioned above. Ravana was made a very powerful man by worshipping Lord Shiva, and he used to offer severed heads to please Lord Shiva. He became so powerful by the grace of Lord Shiva that all the demigods were afraid of him, until at last he challenged the personality of Godhead, Sri Ramchandra, and thus ruined himself. In other words, all such persons who aspire after gaining some or all of the material objects of enjoyment, or the gross materialistic persons, are on the whole less intelligent, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:20. It is said there that those who are bereft of all good sense are those whose intelligence is withdrawn by the deluding energy of Maya, aspire to achieve all sorts of material enjoyment in life by pleasing the various demigods, or by advancing in material civilization under the heading of scientific progress. The real problem of life in the material world is to solve the question of birth, death, old age, and disease. No one wants to change his birthright. No one wants to meet death. No one wants to be old or invalid. And no one wants diseases. But these problems are solved neither by the grace of any demigod nor by the so-called advancement of material science. In the Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, such less intelligent person have been described as devoid of all good sense. Shukadev Goswami said that out of 8,400,000 species of living entities, the human form of life is rare and valuable. And out of those rare human beings, those who are conscious of the material problems are rarer still. And still more rare persons are those who are conscious of the value of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which contains the messages of the Lord and his pure devotees. Death is inevitable for everyone, intelligent or foolish. But Parikshit Maharaj has been addressed by Goswami as the Manisi, or a man of highly developed mind, because at the time of death he left all material enjoyment and completely surrendered himself under the lotus feet of the Lord by hearing his messages from the right person, Shukadev Goswami. But aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned. Such aspirations are something like the intoxication of the degraded human society. Intelligent persons should try to avoid these aspirations and seek instead the permanent life by returning home back to Godhead. Begins, one should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotee for spiritual advancement. But somehow or other we're on this verse today. So, it's like a menu. Where are you? Many choices of what to enjoy in this material world and how. And the scriptures explain from every level how we can advance in our life. And those who are actually in higher understanding know that everything is under the control of higher powers. Materialistic people are trying to enjoy a material world by their own intelligence, by their own physical prowess. They are trying to make advancement. And certainly they are making some advancement. But they are not really enjoying the fruits of their activities, hardly at all. Here we find in the Vedas, if you want to be a materialist, the Vedas tell you how to be a very good materialist. Because by your powers, it's very, very tiny what you can accomplish. But if you somehow or other appeal to the higher powers, the controlling deities of this universe, and they give you blessings, they can give you incredible, incredible facility for material enjoyment. Just like we find there has been some strong conquerors within this world, Aurangzeb or Napoleon, Stalin, Hitler, the various kings of the British Empire, they had some power by their very incredible diplomatic intelligence, by their influence over others, by their own charisma and their strength. But really, what did they gain? They gained a few little islands on this earth And within a few short years, they lost it. And they lost their lives as well. But we see people like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu, they really conquered. They conquered billions of times greater than any of these so-called demons of Kali Yuga, or materialists. Why? Because they were not depending on their own physical strength. They were actually getting strength from the higher powers, which is far beyond their own. So actually, this is real intelligence. To know that everything within this material existence is being controlled by supernatural personalities who have tremendous powers, and by somehow or other pleasing them, or somehow or other performing the necessary sacrifice by which they become obliged to you, then you can get tremendous, tremendous facilities for material enjoyment. And each particular demigod has particular realm of material affairs that they control. And here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining the whole, not the whole, there are millions of demigods, but what most people aspire for in this material world and how to actually get a super excellent facility to enjoy that. And in this way, the Vedas are teaching you how to become a very, very, very incredible enjoyer of material nature, if that's what you want. But the benefit of such worship is that at least you're accepting a higher authority over yourself. At least you're humbling yourself before someone greater than you. And ultimately, all of these demigods are great souls. So at least you're putting yourself in a subordinate position, no matter how much less intelligent your desires are. And that is, in and of itself, advancement of civilization. The atheists, they consider that they are God, that they are the controllers. At least such materialistic people are accepting that they're not the controllers, they're under control, and they need help from higher powers. So in this way, the Vedas are gradually meant to bring people to higher stages of consciousness. And this is the process how. But when we come in contact with the Vedic school, we gradually have the great opportunity to understand the higher sources of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada explained that all these demigod worshippers, they're actually indirectly on their way back home, back to Godhead. Because they're basically accepting the Vedic authority. And once they accept the Vedic authority, higher knowledge is contained in the Vedas, which they will be eventually, by the grace of Krishna, exposed to. And ultimately, they're going to surrender to Krishna. In fact, one time, one of our godbrothers was in Calcutta during Durga Puja. Have you ever been in Calcutta during Durga Puja? It's something like being in Bombay during Ganesh Puja, except much more, because Bengalis are very enthusiastic about worshipping Kali, Durga. Anyway, it's a massive festival. Everything is just in incredible intensity of worshipping goddess Durga. And everybody is worshipping for material benedictions. The Vaishnavas, they stay in their mat and chant japa during that time. They have loud kirtans. But everyone is out, just, give Mataji, give me this, give me this. And they're just dancing and their eyes are full of desire for material enjoyment. And I remember the first time I saw Durga Puja. It was in Vrindavan. It was Durga Puja. I didn't know what is this Durga Puja. I was just walking through the lanes of Vrindavan and I just heard this a type of kirtan I never heard before. You know, I was accustomed to mridangas, taratals, harmoniums, sometimes this sarangi and veenas.
this day there was just this beating of these big drums and this loud howling, and I came in, and these people, they didn't look peaceful at all. They didn't look like they were intoxicated like in a kirtan of the Vaishnavas. They just looked so intensely in anxiety for something. And I couldn't figure it out. I didn't know what was happening. I was wondering, what is this? Anyways, I stayed for some time just to try to understand. And it was such a feeling of such material desire, such material ambition. And then I saw, when the curtains opened, it was Durga Devi. And how they were looking at Durga Devi, it wasn't like, please engage me in your loving service. It was something very different. It was, I have service for you, Mataji. Anyways, there's really striking difference. And that was in Vrindavan. You can imagine Durga Puja in Calcutta. The whole city is named after that. The original name of the city was Kalighat. And then the British changed Kalighat to Calcutta just to demoralize the Indians by trying to make everything Western sounding. So, in this way, this devotee was just, couldn't sleep at night for 9 days, whatever it is, because it was just all night banging and screaming and pujas like that. So he asked Prabhupada that, you know, what is this Durga Puja? They're just so many material benedictions they're wanting. And Prabhupada said, yes, that is correct. And then he said, in Christianity and Judaism and Islam, they are actually worshipping God, correct? Prabhupada said, yes. He said, I want to know which is higher, these people worshipping Durga Devi or the people in the Western religions worshipping the Supreme God? Prabhupada explained that actually it's a question of the sincerity of one's heart. But in general, he said, Durga's higher. The reason he explained is because the Vedas teach the highest level of pure, unmotivated, unconditional loving service to the Lord. The extent that no other religion can grasp. Srimad Bhagavatam. And those who are worshipping the demigods, Prabhupada said they are in the house of the Vedas. Because they're accepting authority from the Vedas. And they're accepting some guidelines from the Vedas, even though they may be totally materialistic. Gradually, they will become purified. And gradually, they will get higher and higher understandings of what the Vedas are teaching, and ultimately, they will achieve the conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam, pure unalloyed devotion to Krishna. So he declared that it was higher. So this is the genius of Vedavyasa. He has compiled the Vedic literatures in such a way to elevate everyone. The 18 Puranas, 6 for those in the mode of ignorance, 6 for those in the mode of passion, 6 for those in the mode of goodness, to bring them to the ultimate, Srimad Bhagavatam, transcendental, Shuddha Sattvic state of consciousness. So here we find it is like, in one sense, it is concession. Whatever you want, we'll give you, but at least come to the Vedas. At least accept a higher authority. But Krishna explains, kamais thais thaira hrityajnana prapadyante nyadevata tam tam niyamamashtaya prakritjana yatashvaya, that it is less intelligent to worship the demigods for material things. And those who worship demigods ultimately realize this verse, that the fruits of all of their great, great austerities, penances, and yajnas is temporary. It's ultimately a source of misery. Abrama Buddha Bhuvana Loka Punar Avatanojana Mamupetatu Ponteya Punar Janmana Vidyate. Krishna says, from the highest planet, Brahmalok down to Patalalok, they are all miserable places, because they are all places where ultimately you must die and you must lose everything. The one who attains my abode never takes birth in this material world again. Krishna consciousness is the culmination of all transcendental realization. Bahunam janmanamante jnanapam ampapadyate vasudeva savam samahatma sudurlavam. After many, many births and deaths, after many, many observances of various religious practices, when one finally comes to the point of knowledge, he surrenders to Vasudev Krishna, knowing Krishna to be the cause of all causes and all that is. And such a person surrenders to Krishna. That person is very rare. That is definition of Mahatma. The acharyas are not very favorable towards so many different labels of Mahatmas for so many different types of people. Because Krishna's definition of Mahatma is this. One who surrenders to Krishna, he is Mahatma. Mahatmanastumam partha daivim prakriti mashata bhajantyananyaman yatpabhutadamavyaya. Mahatma is one who is always under the influence of Krishna's divine nature, because he is always engaged in Krishna's service. That is Mahatma. And such a soul is very, very rare. So, Shukadeva Goswami is here telling Maharaj Parikshit this. This is very interesting. Maharaj Parikshit is about to die. He has 7 days to live. And this verse takes a lot of time of that 7 days. In fact, it's seven verses. Every second is very important for Maharaj Parikshit. He wants to get the highest, the fullest, the richest realizations. And Shukadeva Goswami is going on and on and on about whatever you desire in this material world, select a particular demigod and you will get it. So why? Why he's giving us this information? This is the spotless Purana, Amalam Puranam. Because it is necessary. It is necessary for Shukadeva Goswami to give us an understanding of how rich, how deep, and how great the Vedas are on every level, and with that understanding, to understand its conclusion. It simply increases our willingness to surrender to Krishna, increases our conviction in the authority of this great literature. Shukadeva Goswami, he lived within his mother's womb for 12 years. He obviously wasn't interested in a good bank balance, worshipping Varuna, or a good wife to worship Uravasi or the Apsaras. He wasn't interested in becoming beautiful by worshipping the Gandharvas. Nor did he want powerful sex and worship Indra. It's a few of the selections of this great menu of items to select. Shukadeva Goswami was simply interested in completely remaining detached from everything of this world and everything that demigods can provide. He had no interest. And by the mercy of Vedavyas, he learned Srimad Bhagavatam and he came to the conclusion of all knowledge. And Shukadeva Goswami throughout the Bhagavatam is stressing the conclusion. Unmotivated devotional service. That's all. That's all Bhagavatam is. But in order to stress the conclusion, it is also necessary to explain the fallacies, the limitations, and the illusion of all of the alternatives that are also there within this world. I have met devotees who, they like this verses very much. Because they want to, when they want to get something, they want to use it in Krishna's service. So they simultaneously worship the particular god, and then with the idea that once I get it, I'll offer it to Krishna. Like that. We have seen. And actually, Srila Prabhupada said, you can do that. The gopis, they worship Katyayani, but they wanted Krishna as their husband. One time in Japan, devotees were collecting to build the Vrindavan Mayapur temples, and they read like this. They read, if you, Ganapati gives good success for making money. So they asked Prabhupada, can we worship Ganesh to make a lot of money to send you to build the temple in Vrindavan and Mayapur? Srila Prabhupada said, it is not necessary, because all the demigods are contained within Krishna, and if you worship Krishna, you get everything. He said, but if you want to do, you can do, as long as you offer the result to Krishna. So in this way, demigod worship, if we actually have an unmotivated desire to offer the results to Krishna in devotional service, then it is bhakti. What Krishna condemns is worshipping the demigods for our own personal sense gratification. But actually there is no need, because Krishna is full and complete in himself. And it is also said that all the demigods reside within the spiritual master. Acharyamam vijanayam navamanyeta karhichit namarati buddhusuyeta saravadeva mayo guru. All demigods are within the guru. Krishna himself is within the guru. So by simply surrendering to the instructions of the spiritual master, we're already fulfilling all the purposes of all the Vedas. So there is no need to distract our mind apart by so many of these other ideas. But at the same time, we should not condemn. It is a very important principle, which is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that one, a devotee, should never, ever, ever be the slightest bit disrespectful to any demigod. Because the demigods are great personalities. Some of them may be mixed devotees, some of them may be pure devotees, but whatever their particular function is within material existence, they are all working under the direction of Krishna, directly or indirectly. And they are all endowed with certain powers and opulences by Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains that even sometimes we find that Narada Muni, he actually bowed down to Hiranyakashipu. He actually was his servant. And we often find sometimes great souls, they offer some respect or honor to a great materialistic person. Prabhupada explains it is because they understand that whatever opulence they have is the opulence that has been given to them by Krishna. And anyone who is in a powerful level in any regard, it means they have received it from Krishna. They have received their power from Krishna. So sometimes devotees, they are willing to honor the power of Krishna wherever they're seeing it. And they are willing to honor someone who has somehow been endowed with the power of Krishna. They don't worship such a person, but they offer respects. An example of this is Mayavadi sannyasis. Prabhupada said, if you don't bow down to a sannyasi when you see, you have to fast that day, even a Mayavadi. Why? Because that the renunciation of that Mayavadi still represents the principle of renunciation of material enjoyment. even though we won't associate with him, we won't listen to anything he says, we still offer respects because he represents the principle of renunciation. Just as if the Prime Minister came into this room, if we all just totally ignored him and said he's in Maya, then, you know, that is one way of looking at it. But most likely we would give him a garland and we would say Namaskar. Or some of us would say Hare Krishna. Or some would say Haribo. But anyway, some respect. Whatever he is, different prime ministers might be different. Some may be atheists, some may be religious people. That we are not going to discuss. But the position he has been given by Krishna. And therefore you respect a person because he's been given a position by Krishna. Huh? This is actually etiquette. So what to speak of the demigods? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very clear on this point. Never, ever, ever disrespect the demigods. Because it is an aparad. They are great persons. We do not worship them. We do not ask them for material benefits. But we respect them, we honor them. And we know by worshiping Krishna, like watering the root of the tree, every part of the tree, the leaves, the flowers, the tree, the twigs, the fruits, they will all be nourished just by worshiping Krishna. So we have come to this Krishna consciousness movement because we want the highest purpose of life to be fulfilled. We want liberation from all inclinations to the things that the demigods are giving. We want to serve the Lord unconditionally. That is our prayer. And that is the Vaishnava Acharya's interpretation of the chanting of Hare Krishna. The prayer for unalloyed, unconditional service to Radha Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. And if we have some material necessities in life that have to be fulfilled, and sometimes those things are there. To maintain the temple, the brahmachari needs some money. To maintain their household, the family needs some money. To maintain our health, we need certain requirements. And these things are all there. And they are helping us in our devotional service to have these benefits. But we should understand how to depend on Krishna. Krishna teaches Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, you do your work, perform your duty responsibly, and simply depend on me for the results. But actually, if you read Mahabharata, sometimes the Pandavas would go to deities of demigods like Shiva or Kali, and they would offer their respects. They would offer their respects as a matter of etiquette. Not as a matter of necessity. Krishna taught Arjuna exclusive dependence on him and him alone. And all material necessities, Krishna knows what you need, he knows what you want. You just try your very best and depend on Krishna for the results. But make sure that your motive is ultimately his service. And that is the simple, clear, and pure path of Dharma, Krishna consciousness. Is there any questions? Yes?
It sounds a bit difficult to understand that when a person is given so much of facilities for enjoyment through the worship of demigods, how do you ever come to the path of pure devotion? We can see the greatest materialist, the demons who are so powerful because of worshipping the demigods, they never seem to have an inclination towards God. In fact, they were more inimical.
No, that is not true. Bahunam janmanamante jnanapamapamati. This process takes many, many births. But eventually they come to the conclusion. Because they're approaching the Vedic authority and they're accepting the superior position of demigods. They will eventually come to that. The road is open for them to eventually come to that platform. But it takes many, many births, many lifetimes. Not all are demons, but even the demons, Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they worship demigods. Kumbhakarna also worshiped demigods. Their result was they got liberated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by the grace of that demigod, in one sense. By the grace of that demigod, they got the power by which they thought they could challenge God, and then God killed them. Ribo. But generally, people who worship demigods have some sense of religiosity and piety. They may have all kinds of sinful desires too, but there's something pious. The totally impious people are atheists. They are just utterly immersed in the false ego. Does that answer your question? Yes.
Sometimes when devotees talk with each other, they say that you are Indra of library, you are Indra of kitchen. Sometimes they call Indra of library, you are Indra of kitchen. Or they also call Indra. Like Indra.
What? And devotees talk like that?
Yeah. So, is it all right?
You are the Indra of Nasik? Govinda's Indra of a bus? Gauranga's Indra of all the colleges in Bombay? Stoka Krishna's Indra of the go-down? I think everybody will agree that Madan Gopal is Indra of the sound systems. So what is your question?
When we talk like this, is it all right? Sometimes we also give the example of Indra when he became hog. And we talk like that. And when we speak, our tone is not very proper. So is it all right? Are we showing respect to demigods or... What is it?
Srila Prabhupada taught us to address Vaishnavas as Prabhu, not as Indra. better we adhere to Prabhupada's suggestion rather than our own speculation. Does that answer your question? Yes?
Maharaj, when we say that worshipping of demigods or showing respect to demigods, what exactly does that mean? Does that mean that we could also go to a temple of Lord Ganesha and pay obeisances to him and participate in the worship of Lord Ganesha?
It means there is no need to go to the temples of the demigods. Because when you come and bow to Radha Gopinath, you have offered your greatest respects to all the demigods because they are all included within Radha Gopinath. They are all connected as parts and parcels to Radha Gopinath. So there is no need. But we should not disrespect them. We should not do something impolite as far as speaking or as far as our actions toward their temples. That is very important. Respect means when you go by their temple, you can offer pranams. And if you do go into the temple,
there is no harm as long as you are going in with the proper understanding. You're going in to offer respects to a servant of Krishna. You're not going in to ask for bank balance or whatever else is listed here. You're going in to offer respects to a devotee of Krishna. But you can also say, oh, venerable demigod, if you help me in my service to Krishna, that will be very nice. You can do that. As long as the goal is not our sense gratification, but is devotional service. Does that answer your question?
Is it also okay, Maharaj, to go wearing tilak and dhoti to temple of demigod?
Is it okay?
Yes.
It's okay to go like that anywhere. But you shouldn't go to the cinemas or the brothels or because you will give bad reputation to our movement. Or the racetracks. But any religious place you can. Yes?
As person is committed to Krishna consciousness, whatever Bhagavatam is saying, there is unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service, there is on a very high platform. He might have not reached to that level so easily. Now, this stage is much more higher than the demigods also, whatever demigods' standard is. We wanted to go ahead of the demigods. So is it so that when a person wants to come to that level, when a devotee wants to come to that level, these demigods, do they help us to come to that level, or they become an impediment? Because it so happens that they are not a pure devotees. And because they are not a pure devotee...
It depends on whose instructions you are following. If you learn how to respect the demigods from a proper Vaishnava spiritual master in disciplic succession, and you act accordingly, then those all of material existence will be helping you to come closer to Krishna. But if you are following the Mayavad ideas, what is that, Panchopashanam, where all the different gods are this different manifestations of the one supreme God, and it doesn't matter who you worship, it just is a focal point by which you can become Brahman. If you do that type of worship, you will be bewildered from the path of bhakti. So if we must learn how to respect the great souls within this universe, we must learn how to live from the Vaishnava acharyas who are training us in pure devotional service. Then the result will be proper. But just going according to your family's traditions, or according to your own sentiments, or according to the instructions of various Mayavadis or Tantrics or others, their whole conceptions of the demigods is very, very different. If you approach the demigods according to their directions, your bhakti will be spoiled. Yes?
Prabhupada said that the worshipper of Durga is more elevated than a person who is in other religions like Islam or Christian.
Not exactly more elevated. But the cause is within the house in which he's accepting authority of the Vedas, the person has a much greater possibility in that state of ultimately coming to pure unalloyed devotion to Krishna.
And how these people who are following the religions will come to that point? How they will advance? How the people following Islam or Christianity, they are...
How will they advance? If they actually follow their religion very carefully according to proper instructions, directions, then they will become more moral, they will become more faith in God. And actually, you know, in the higher realms of these religions, there is the teaching and the realization of love of God in the Aishwarya Bhav. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the ultimate conclusion of all religion, those who worship the demigods according to Vedic standards have a better chance of ultimately understanding that and going back to Goloka Vrindavan. In this world, those who become very, very pure Christians and go to the planet of Jesus, he may also teach them that. Prabhupada explained that to him. Yes?
Maharaj, you said that process of devotional service purifies all material desires. Devotional service purifies all material desires, but it also said that it increases material desires. So how is something which is transcendental can increase material desire? Like we give this analogy of weeds growing.
Who said that devotional service increases material desires?
Like this example we give about weeds growing up when you're watering the seed of bhakti. Now that is material desires. Now how is something which is transcendental can increase material desire?
Because we are not completely transcendental. Dharmasya hipabharagyasya natathayopakalpate. As you practice devotional service, you become purified. But at the same time, you get empowered by Krishna. And whatever material inclinations we have, that empowerment, we can take it for our own sense gratification too. If you want to, this like, if you want to be a, if you're just living on the streets and you have nothing, then you come to Krishna consciousness and you have great seriousness to distribute books. And then you become empowered to be a big, big book distributor. So you're getting purified by doing it. But at the same time, you've become very expert by the grace of Krishna of influencing other and selling people things. So then if you think, well, now I can influence people so nicely and I'm a great salesman and I still have some desires to enjoy, so I'm going to stop distributing books and I'm going to become the best salesman in the best company. And we have seen devotees do that. We have seen devotees, before they came to this movement, they were living on the side of the road, the footpath, with long hair, not bathing for years. Well, maybe not years, but for long intervals. Hippies. They were basically useless souls, all intoxicated with drugs, not even knowing whether it was day or night, not even knowing anything except that they were miserable. And then somehow or other, Harinam party was dancing by and they were thinking, this is very nice. It's a better life than I have. And they join the Harinam party. And then they go to the temple and they get some prasad and they think, well, this is better to eat prasad here than to live on the road and have nothing to eat. And then gradually they start understanding the philosophy. They start chanting Hare Krishna. Then they become big, big book distributors. They're number one book distributors, perhaps, of the temple. And then they have a clear head. And they know how to control their senses, and they know how to control their mind, they know how to control other people by convincing them to do anything they want them to do. Some shakti Krishna gives them, because they wanted so much to distribute books, Krishna gave them tremendous shakti. But then they were thinking, this shakti is wonderful. Why don't I enjoy? And I know, I won't mention any names, but some of my godbrothers who have gone through this, now they live in big, big mansions. They drive BMWs and Mercedes-Benz. They're multi-millionaires. And every now and then they give a donation to a temple. Where did that power come from? Dharamasya Hyapavaragyasya. Bhagavatam says that you'll get results from your devotional service. Krishna will empower you. Krishna will make you expert. But as long as you still have those material seeds, if you start using those empowerments for your own sense gratification, then that is a great disturbance to bhakti. And some people become famous. Some devotees, they become very good preachers, they become very good managers. Krishna empowered them to be good preachers. Some of them could hardly even tell another person their name before they become devotees. And now they're speaking Bhagavad Katha and Hari Katha in such wonderful ways. And now they're getting fame and adoration. And even within society, they're thinking, oh, this is very nice. Let me enjoy. Let me enjoy the sweet nectar of hearing everyone glorify me. Ah, so this is an example also. These are all the results of your devotional service, that you're becoming empowered. But then you're taking that facility and you're using it for your sense gratification rather than for Krishna's pleasure. Do you understand? So that's, yes, devotional service is transcendental. But the problem is we're not completely transcendental. So as Krishna, as through the transcendental process of devotional service, the purification is taking place, but at the same time the temptations to use the facilities Krishna is giving you for devotional service is also there. And we have to be, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, we have to scrutinizingly be on guard to make sure, because actually all the power we're getting for devotional service is essentially from chanting Hare Krishna. We're saying, Krishna, engage me in your service. And then he's giving us power to do such wonderful service. What will we keep that power in his service, or will we start to use it for something else? That is something we have to be very, very careful. Always. Thank you very much.